Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whitaker-Large, and I'm here to help you create a profitable HMO portfolio. Whether you're a brand new investor or you've been at it for a number of years, my podcast is here to help you make the most from your business, whether that is starting up, scaling, or systemizing. Please hit the subscribe button to make sure you never miss an episode. And if you've got an awe-inspiring project, an inspirational investing story, or a unique approach to HMOs, I'd love to hear from you. Hello, everybody. It's great to welcome you to this presentation. Now, today, I'm really delighted to say that I've got a very special guest on because this particular guest is an expert in an area that I am not an expert in. And I don't claim to be an expert in every area that I teach or train you about, but I know my limitations and I know how important it is to get other people in who are expert in certain fields to help you develop and learn. So today I'd like to welcome Paul Roberts, and he founded the Capital Allowance Review Service that he's going to be talking about today. And he's been involved in the industry for over 20 years. So here's a guy who knows a lot about capital allowances and also tax issues to do with property. During that time, he's recovered millions of pounds for clients and handled many cases of all shapes and sizes. He's never lost a case. That's a very amazing track record. And he believes it's down to the due diligence being applied before submitting a claim to HMRC, which he's going to talk us through today. Paul was also involved in the legislation changes in 2014. So he really knows his stuff inside out. And he sat on the HMRC working committee as part of that change. So I'm really pleased today to welcome Paul Roberts. Hello, Paul.
Hi. Welcome all. Nice to be here.
Really good to have you. And I'm really looking forward to hearing and learning a bit more about capital allowances. So I'm going to hand over to you and I will put myself on mute. And if I have any questions, I'll shout up.
Yeah, you dive in. No problem.
Thank you.
So by way of a beginning, as you've already pointed out, Wendy, I've been doing this for over 20 years. And what's quite remarkable, and I still find it remarkable to this day, is that a lot of the issues that we were dealing with, issues and problems that we were dealing with all those years ago, 20 years ago, it's rather bizarre, but they're still there now, despite how much time's passed and how many learning curves have been gone through. The issues regarding capital allowances and the problems they create are still there to this day. And by way of an example, and I'll elaborate on this somewhat a little bit as well, but the three issues that are particularly of a problem is that capital allowances are very much misunderstood, which is also bizarre when you consider that they've been around for over 100 years. There's nothing new about them, but they are nevertheless still very misunderstood. And we have a slide here which might help you to understand why that's the case, because it is quite easy to understand when you see this slide. One of the other issues, which again I've had to deal with for 20 years, is they are dramatically underestimated. And I have an example of, it's a pal of mine, actually. I play golf with him. He also owned a building. And he created a bit of a story, which I've put onto a slide, just to demonstrate the underestimated issue. But added to all that, in 2014, you referred to the legislation change. In 2014, then came legislation changes regarding capital allowances, which, if you're a buyer and a seller of commercial property, of which HMOs are also a qualified activity, if you don't understand those legislation changes, it's very easy to lose all the capital allowances forever and a day on that property. So if you're a regular buyer or seller, understanding the legislation is critical. And if there's anybody who needs any more help or advice, there's a slide at the end of this with my telephone number on. I'd be quite happy to help as much as I can, because it's a piece of legislation with real teeth. Okay, let's just get a couple of the basic things out. What is a capital allowance? So it's a capital allowance is a taxable benefit against expenditure on plant and machinery for the purpose of the trade. And it can be used to reduce a company or an individual's tax bill. It can be used to recover tax that's already been paid if certain boxes are ticked correctly. If there are no profits in the organisation that owns the property, it can still be used to enhance the sale going forward because it can be passed on to a buyer and has a real value. And by doing so, it has a true value, can sit on a balance sheet to be used as and when required. So it's quite a useful weapon. But here's one of the first problems, which again, I've had to tussle with for a number of years. What is plant and machinery? The majority of people I speak to, and I include in this, by the way, accountants and solicitors, as well as taxpayers, don't understand what constitutes plant and machinery. So what's happening in reality is they can be buying buildings, selling buildings, refurbishing buildings, extending buildings, and in so doing, they'll be installing a whole raft of plant and machinery, which is, has a tax benefit, but they don't know they've done it. And because they don't know they've done it or they're doing it, they don't create the relevant kinds of detail that they would normally then be able to hand to their accountant. And the accountant, if they had the detail, would be able to claim the capital allowances quite efficiently. But this inventory, this detail, because people don't understand what constitutes plant and machinery, it's never documented, or very rarely. 20 years, I can probably count it on two fingers how many times I've seen the level of detailed inventory that's required to make a good capital allowance claim. But the issues which we'll talk about in terms of plant and machinery, I've got a couple of case histories which will start to identify what kind of things qualify. But on the slide you see at the moment, as I've just said, there's no definition of plant in the Act, but in its ordinary sense, it includes whatever apparatus is used by a businessman for carrying on his business, not his stock in trade, which he buys or makes for sale, but all goods and chattels, fixed or movable, live or dead, which he keeps for the permanent employment in his business. Actually, I'll only laugh a little bit at that live or dead one, because one of the first ever capital allowance cases was actually in Glasgow, and it revolved around whether a dray horse was actually plant and machinery for the purpose of the trade. And a dray horse, for those of you who don't know, is something that used to pull the wagons that had all the beer barrels on it. It was called a dray. And by the way, it was proved that the dray horse was plant and machinery. So to try and make it a little easier to understand where this concept works, let me introduce you to PEFs. So we have capital allowances, which have been around for a long time, but we also now have PEFs, property embedded fixtures and features. The key word here, Wendy, is embedded, because the items that we generally refer to and find in vast quantities are items that are embedded in a building. They can be nailed in, screwed in, plastered in, or bricked in. And because of that, they're often seen as being part of the building. And they are part of the building. But because they also have functionality, they're a capital allowable tax benefit. But because they're embedded in the building, everybody takes them for granted and they just sit there until somebody chooses to take the time to identify them, list them and value them, and then send that submission to the HMRC. So again, remember, embedded and functionality. Those are two key words in this discussion.
Paul, can I interrupt you there? Can you give me an example of what a property embedded fixtures and features would be? What are the kind of things we're talking about?
Well, let me give you a couple of the bizarre examples, which might highlight why it is that people don't appreciate what's a piece of plant and machinery. If I told you a door hinge was plant and machinery, what would you think?
I would have thought, no, well, you must be wrong.
It is. And furniture in general on a door is all plant and machinery. Let's face it, if you took the hinges off a door, how would the door work?
Yes. I totally understand the logic behind it. It just, in your own mind, or in my mind, plant and machinery seems like big things. It seems like it's going to be something big and mechanical and, you know, probably driven by a big, electric current.
And you've just epitomised the issue as to why capital allowances are mixed, because you're not unusual in that regard, Wendy. That's quite a normal. But let me give you a couple of other things which are equally bizarre. How about non-slip floors? If you go into a public toilet or in an office block, you'll find it's got a non-slip floor. If that non-slip floor wasn't there, health and safety would come along and say, I'm sorry, you can't use these facilities. Somebody might slip and break their ankle. So a non-slip floor is plant and machinery.
Interesting.
And the one final one, which is a bit of a daft one, but I like it. I'm sure you've used a lift.
Mm-hmm.
And a lift is a box, a big mechanical box with lots of levers and things attached to it. So that's clearly plants and machinery. What about the lift shaft?
Yes, I mean, I suppose you're right. That's embedded. That's embedded pictures and features.
Trust me, a lift is not much good without a lift shaft.
Yeah.
So that becomes plant and machinery. So that's just a rather small list of the rather more bizarre examples. But I could go on about the items that are embedded. Things like telephone points and health and safety issues and sanitation issues, heating issues, all of these things. Again, remember that word functionality. They all have functionality. If you took them away, something would stop happening. And that's the key. And that's why they're missed.
Okay, thank you. Very helpful.
So, three key points. They're misunderstood, they're underestimated, and I'm going to introduce you to a good friend of mine, Wendy. He's called Sid. Sid the elephant. I talk to Sid the elephant every week. He's a pain in the what's-it, and he's always wrong. But I'll introduce you to Sid in a minute. So, misunderstood. Here's the first reason capital allowances are misunderstood. What you see in front of you is a timeline of all the legislation changes that have taken place since 1996. And actually, they're not all there because I couldn't get the slide big enough. So you can see how, from solicitors and accountants and taxpayers, how it would be very easy to lose track and how to stop understanding what constitutes plant and machinery. Some of the changes have been very small, but a number have been significant and big. So
And for people who might be listening rather than watching this presentation, what I can tell you is the slide is full of actually very interesting graphics. It's not a boring slide by any means, but it starts way back in 1996, and you've got various different key dates up until 2023, with all sorts of different boxes with further information and pieces of legislation that were brought in, changes in policy, etc. And I can see there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, about 16 or 17 key dates on that slide, which just emphasizes what Paul is saying, how much this is misunderstood, because there's so much information to not only understand but also keep up to date with.
It's been a nightmare. I mean, even we keeping up to date with this sometimes fall over something that wasn't as clear as it might have been. So I can see how this would catch people out very easily. So the next one we talked about was being underestimated. And well, no, we've got a technical hitch. Underestimated. So I play golf, Wendy, rather badly. But I do try, and it's a nice walk. And I have a regular group called a four ball. And one of the guys in the this four ball happened to own an office that he was in the process of selling. Now, normally I don't take business to the golf course. For me, social is social, work is work. But he explained to me that he was selling the office and that his accountant had said, really, don't bother with the capital allowances because they're not worth the time and effort. It's a lot of work for nothing. Anyway, I twisted his arm quite heavily on this occasion. And as you can see, from not being worth anything, we found £118,000 worth of tax he was about to give away. Now, I don't know about you, Wendy, but I find £118,000 quite an interesting amount of money. One of the other interesting things about it is that it represents a yield of 25% against the expenditure. And here's something that might astound you a little bit. Finding 25% of the spend as an outstanding capital allowances on a typical commercial property is normal, routine, and happens all the time. There's nothing special about that percentage. All the time. Which is why being underestimated can cost some people a lot of money. And if they find out too late, because of this legislation in 2014, there's nothing they can do about it. It's gone. What do you think about Sid?
He looks big.
He is. Sid is the elephant in the room. I've known Sid for many years. As I said earlier on, I talk to him every week. He's always saying the same things, and he's always wrong. What Sid is whispering to the group of people in the room is that, don't worry, boys and girls, we've already done this. You don't have to try doing it again. We've already done it. And the fact is, he's wrong. Simple. But let me explain why he's wrong, because it meant then you'll understand why it happens. In a routine commercial environment, if we take, say, you have an office somewhere, you'll have a desk in that office. And at some stage, you'd have gone out and you'd have bought the desk, you'd have got an invoice, you'd have paid the invoice, and then you'd have given that invoice to your accountant as proof of expenditure. Okay? Your accountant would then have said, okay, this is money Wendy spent, it's a desk, and we recognise that a desk for Wendy is plant and machinery. So I'll claim the capital allowances for Wendy. That's happening all the time. So an accountant will have typically, and I'm not being aggressive towards an accountant here, by the way, I understand what's going on here. So an accountant will quite sincerely believe he's covered all the capital allowances because he's dealt with all the information that's been given him. So here's the question. What happens if you spend money on qualifying pieces of plant and machinery and you don't get an invoice? Now what? What are you going to do with that, Wendy?
Well, I suppose you're limited because you've got no documentary evidence.
No, and go back to this issue of you might have spent money on stuff that's plant and machinery and you didn't realise it. So the incident of there being no invoices or documents is regular. So let me give you a couple of examples and you'll recognise them instantly. And they're very relevant to your world where people are buying property. An HMO is a qualifying activity, a bit restricted, but it's a qualifying activity nevertheless. They're refurbishing property, they're extending property. Now, all of these arrangements quite often will come with documentation that has little or no detail in them. Have you ever dealt with stage payments, Wendy?
Yes.
Right. Where stage payments are a brilliant document that tells you absolutely nothing, apart from you owe somebody £10,000 for the end of the month. What never gets discussed is the fact that in that stage payment, it doesn't say, in January, we installed 20 radiators, 4 toilets, 6 smoke detectors, and a non-slip floor. It doesn't do that. So what happens is your accountant gets the stage payment document, and he sees this as what they are, and he puts them into the balance sheet as a freehold or a leasehold improvement, quite correctly. But they also have a capital allowable benefit that's missed until somebody comes and digs them out. This is happening day in, day out.
And that's what you do?
Yes.
Great.
I like Sid quite a lot, but he can be a nuisance. Good old Sid. The number of times I've been asked to take that slide out, I can't tell you. I like it. Well, do you like it?
Well, it certainly illustrates the point.
Yes.
And for those who are listening rather than watching, it's a photograph of a group of businessmen, very equal opportunities, not. I think they're all white, middle-aged, middle class. And there's a very, very big elephant standing at the head of the table, nudging one of the men around the table. That's the photo.
You see, the reason we couldn't put girls into that is because we thought they wouldn't like the elephant.
Yes.
Right. So the summary of that little bit is one of my favourites here. It's a perfect storm. Do you remember the film, The Perfect Storm? Yeah? No?
I do.
Right. So a perfect storm. The example that we just discussed is a perfect storm in accounting worlds. You have a taxpayer who is spending money on plant and machinery and doesn't realise they're doing it, so they don't create any documentation. Then you have an accountant who's not given any documentation, so he doesn't do anything about the stuff he's not got. It's a perfect storm. People simply don't know what they don't know.
Yes.
That's why there has been a substantial amount of activity done over the last 20-odd years and will continue to be so for some time. Perfect storm. So how does this apply to an HMO? An HMO is a perfectly legitimate qualifying activity for capital allowances. It does, however, come with a couple of restrictions, which are very important people understand, because the capital allowances in the HMO world have been somewhat abused. So in an HMO environment, probably it would be best to help you to understand that a capital allowance isn't available on residential property. It's only available on commercial property. Now, an HMO kind of sits with a foot in both camps, doesn't it?
Yes. And I think this is probably why people are confused and misunderstand, because you're right. It's valued often on a commercial basis. It's a commercial enterprise. It's not a residential property. But on the other hand, people live there. So therefore, it's still you don't pay business rates on it. You pay council tax. But and it's a residence for somebody to live. So yes, it's a kind of a hybrid. It's neither one nor the other.
Absolutely right. Now, given that you said is absolutely correct, the areas of an HMO that do perfectly legitimately apply for capital allowances are the communal areas or the public areas. Because HMRC take the view that a dwelling or a residence consists of certain facilities that are an absolute prerequisite to make a house a home. So that area, for instance, has to have a toilet. It has to have a bedroom, it has to have a bathroom, it has to have a kitchen, and it has to have a living room or something similar. Because without any of those issues, it's not a complete home or dwelling, is it? So if you then apply that logic to an HMO, any of the areas where you would consider you're going through somebody's front door into their dwelling don't qualify for capital allowances. However, if you've got communal areas like corridors, boiler rooms, in the Razzy ones, you might have gyms or cinemas, who knows? So all of those public areas would qualify for capital allowances, as would any outdoor signage or car parking facilities. But you see, what's happened in the past here, and this is where I would raise a note of caution, it has been known that landlords who perhaps had a terraced property with Janet and John living in it. And Janet would be in one of the bedrooms, John would be in the other one of the bedrooms, and the landlord would say, okay, those two bedrooms constitute the dwelling, therefore all the rest of the facilities in the terraced house are the communal areas. And some of them got away with it. But at the end of the day, if you're to do a capital allowance claim, because of this abuse, it's not out of the question that HMRC might ask you to prove and validate what you've done. And you'd have to prove and show where you got your amounts from and that you haven't included any of the residential areas. So this is something you have to be a little cautious about getting correct. Is that clear enough?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So in those communal areas, we've got a variety of items, which are, so anything to do with a fire precaution in a communal area, anything to do with signage or health and safety, the boiler rooms, emergency lighting, anything in corridors like handrails, or maybe there's a communication system, fire alarms, any of those items would qualify as capital allowable plant and machinery for the purpose of the trade, providing they're in a communal area. Now then, I just thought of something which might just need explaining. If you have an HMO with a number of apartments in it, and each one of the apartments, let's say for the purpose of this exercise, has its own ensuite, and it also has its own kitchen area. And then on top of that, the HMO has also got a public kitchen and a public toilet. Then it would be quite conceivable to argue that those two areas, which are extra, would constitute as public, a communal area, because the apartments have already got the facilities anyway. Okay? So, everything clear so far, Wendy? Are you all right with that?
Yep, I'm on it. Sorry, I keep muting myself in between you speaking, which is why there's a little bit of a gap. It's only because I'm muting and unmuting, so I don't disturb your audio sound. Okay. Apologies for that.
No problem. So I've just done a couple of case histories here, because you mentioned that some of your people also had other elements of interest of properties. And this is just a couple of examples of where capital allowances have been applied. To this particular one is an office. It was bought for £1 million, and we found £291,000 of the capital allowances that had been missed. So if you look to the right, you'll see 27%. You remember me referring to 25% as being normal? So here we see a 27% yield.
Amazing. That's great, isn't it?
And normal. But then also you can see in the example of qualifying items, you can see the kind of things that are used. You know, you think about something like a telephone socket and you think, well, hang on, it's only a 90 pence piece of plastic. No, it isn't. It isn't. It's a 90 pence piece of plastic that's got a whole heap of wire going into it, and they then have two engineers to install it. And what happens if you've got 40 of them in your office? Suddenly that telephone socket is worth £120 in capital allowances. So there's a lot of relatively small items that can suddenly build up into a huge case. The next slide is a specific one because the content is the same as I just described. The items that are in there will qualify as plant and machinery. The point I've made here is that there's a popular misconception that capital allowances aren't available if you lease or rent property. That's not true. All you have to do is spend money on a qualifying asset. Whether you lease it or rent it doesn't matter. The only thing about a leasehold property is the chances are there's going to be two claims. There'll be the claim by the landlord investor who owns the building, and there'll be the claim by the tenant who spent money on making it fit for his purpose. So leasehold expenditure and rental expenditure still qualifies for capital allowances. Well, these are just some juicy examples here, Wendy, really. You know, an extension of cost of £525,000, and we found 47% capital allowances. You know, we're talking big money here. It's very rarely small expenditure, and it can always be used by taxpayers. I'm sure they'd rather have it in their bank account than the HMRC's bank account.
Yes, quite.
And this was a hotel refurbishment, 68%. Some of it occasionally sounds a bit too good to be true, and I recognise that, but none of these cases are made up. They are real, they are what they are. So let me just get to this issue about the 2014. So HMRC believed that because capital allowances was such a huge and strong benefit, that everybody would be doing it. So whenever they saw capital allowances coming through on a second-hand property, they thought it meant there was tax leakage. In other words, the capital allowances had already been claimed and somebody was trying to claim them again. And I'm sure in the past that might have happened. So what they decided in 2014, there's the legislation change, basically says, without getting technical, basically says that in the event of a commercial property changing hands post-2014, the capital allowance position has got to be dealt with and quantified. Not necessarily claimed, we've got not everybody will want to claim them. Maybe they've not made any money, so they can't claim them. But they've got to be dealt with and treated with a document called a 1980 election, so that it's clear and documented that something's happened and it's been acknowledged with an amount, which is basically the line in the sand that the revenue could see and they could refer back to make sure that something had happened or not. Now, if that 198 election isn't applied to a commercial property transaction going forward, after 2 years, it's lost. So any of you people who are buying or selling, this is a key piece of information.
Yeah, they've got to do this within 2 years. Now, yes. Is that two... With a couple of the examples you've given, building works took place. So let's say the extension to the care home. Is that 2 years of purchasing the care home or 2 years of the development being completed?
From the day, well, it's a mute point, to be honest, Wendy, because sometimes if you get to sit down with a room full of accountants, they get to have a very lively conversation about whether it's the due date of the expenditure or the tax year-end date of the year it took place in. So it becomes a bit of a lively conversation.
So there is still some, as always, the devil's in the detail. Yeah. And there's often a little bit of debate about these things. But without getting into the detail, it sounds like you are quite used to being able to discuss that, presumably with HMRC, and find out what their view would be and whether the claim would be acceptable when it's submitted.
Actually, bizarrely, no, that's not how it works, because the revenue wouldn't cooperate to that level, I'm afraid. What they tend to take the view is, do what you're going to do, send us the information, and then we'll make a decision.
Ah, okay.
This is the rule of self-assessment. However, just to go back to something you said right at the beginning, we've never lost a case, because our process is full of a whole heap of due diligence, so we can establish what money's been spent and when, how it was treated when it was spent, so we're not claiming something that's already been claimed. Then we refer to all the legal documents to see if there's anything in there we should know about. So by the time we submit the claim to the revenue, we already know it's a viable claim because we've checked. So at that point, because we have a responsibility for checking, for dealing with that claim or any queries, we're happy to take on any HMRC inspector that wants to talk to us because we can prove what we've done. And that's the key point. That's the key, absolutely key point. And if you don't do that, you can risk a pretty unpleasant time in an inquiry. But let's not dwell on that. So there you have it. There's the 198 election. It's the legal document which secures the property capital allowance position. And when does it have to be done? It has to be done on any property transaction post April 14. Now, that's not strictly true, Wendy, but there are some caveats, particularly if it's been bought by a non-taxpaying entity like a charity or a pension scheme. But that's perhaps for another time. It gets a little bit complicated. In general terms, it's for a commercial property transaction after 2014. Question time. Have you asked all yours? Have you got any more?
Yeah, no, you're doing great. You keep going. I'll ask them as I go. So I don't have any at this point. Thank you, Paul.
Okay, well, that is this particular, well, the specialised version of capital allowances is done for now.
Amazing, amazing. Well, what I love is it was very direct, sort of short and sweet, but to the point. Yeah. And I'll tell you what I've learned, Paul, is that first of all, this is such an intricate and probably legal area of tax. I mean, what isn't these days? That legislation seems to sort of rule our lives, doesn't it? However, let me move off the political point there. Capital allowances is clearly a massive benefit to people when they are buying property and developing property, particularly when it moves, when it sort of starts with sitting in that kind of hybrid HMO model where there's some opportunities there, but also when you're moving into commercial property. So I think people who are watching or listening to this, the question they may have in their minds is, well, that's great, but how do you assess what kind of refund I could expect from HMRC? What is the process? How long does it take? And I suppose, what are your costs in doing that?
Okay, you asked a few questions then. So in terms of the timescale, that's a bit tricky to gauge because it can vary depending on the availability of the information. If we get the information that we need for our due diligence quickly, then we can turn it around quickly. So for instance, we've done one as quickly as 2 weeks. We've done one that took 2.5 years. But I would guess as a very, very mean average, about 3 months is about the turnaround time-ish. Our fees are a contingent fee based on what we achieve. So if we don't achieve anything, there are no fees. And that would be, although everything's negotiable depending on the size of the claim we're looking at, typically the RAT rate would be 5% of the capital allowances that we find. Mm-hmm. The process that we go through is, well, I've alluded to it already. We would talk to the client to understand what their property is, what they've done when they spent money, how they spent it. We try and talk to their accountant so we can understand how it's been treated in their accounts. Has anything gone through repairs and renewals? Is anything in fixtures and fittings? So by the time we've done all the due diligence, we can get to the point where we can say, right, we can see what you've done, we can see what you've spent, and we can see what you've claimed. We now know sufficiently about, for instance, an office block to know that we'll be able to find another X amount. I mean, usually, although it's not an absolute science, we're not usually far off. And that becomes a proposal. Proposal stroke illustration, which goes to the client and their accountant, and then they have a simple job. They either do it or they don't. We're not a sales organisation. That's not the world we live in. We present the facts and then it's a case of, do you want to do it or not? I suppose the technical term for this is it's a bit of a no-brainer. Why would you not want to do it?
quite, absolutely. Well, I think it's been really, really helpful. I think you've explained it extremely well, even for a bear of little brain like me. I understand it. I've got it. And I think that it's made me think, actually, there's a couple of buildings that I need to have a chat with you about, Paul. Okay, I think there's a few that have slipped through the net and, you know, we should get on with this ASAP. There's a particular block of flats that we bought last year, and I'm thinking, this could be a nice little, you know, extra bunt on top of that sale. So I think, I think you and I need to have a separate call. But however, I think it's been really, really helpful to find out your experiences and, you know, the service that you provide for individuals. So what's the next step for anybody who would like to maybe explore a little bit? Perhaps they feel that they don't know enough to take any action yet with their accountant. They'd like to have a chat with you. What should they do?
The quick answer to that is, I've got a telephone number. Is if they were to put a quick call into me and just explain what they've got, it would take me about 5 to 10 minutes of questions and answers, at the end of which I'd probably be able to say it's worth looking at further. What I would be careful about doing is going too quick. Oh, this is going to sound awful, and I don't mean it to. Is going too quickly to their accountants and saying, have you claimed the capital allowances for me? Because they will undoubtedly get the answer, of course we have, based on all the things I've already explained. Whereas if I'm able to speak to that accountant, I can go through what we do and how we do it, and he will then, or she will then, understand why what we do is different to what they do. They couldn't. Part of our process is, for instance, to go into a building and take it apart room by room in a survey. So we end up with an inventory that's absolutely accurate to the highest level. With the best will in the world, an accountant would never have the time to do that. But then we have to also value the items. You know, if we have a building that's in Nottingham that was purchased in 2010 with a radiator in it, somebody has got to understand how much it would cost to install a radiator in Nottingham in 2010, because that figure will be different to a radiator installed in Kensington in 2010. So all these numbers have to be put together in a way that can be questioned and defended.
Yes, so, totally.
But that, if I have the opportunity to explain that to all the professionals around them, then usually I can get an understanding of why I'm approaching it a bit differently to them.
Fantastic. Okay, great. So first stop, get in touch with you either through your email, which you've very kindly provided, and I'll add that in the notes to the podcast, or your phone number. Give you a ring, have a chat with you. You'll ask some initial questions to go through a bit of a due diligence to find out whether there is a green light or an amber light, or maybe it's a red light. And then you can take the next steps and advise that person on what they need to provide to you and whether there's a likelihood of them being able to make a claim. Yes. And you'll help guide them through that. That's absolutely brilliant, Paul. Well, I salute you for helping landlords, investors, property developers make some extra money, because in this day and age, our profits are being squeezed, despite the fact that there is huge demand for rental property out there. And many people are wanting to turn commercial property into residential, or maybe use it for purposes whereby they might be almost, let's say, creating what you might call a CMO, a commercial multiple occupancy unit, or commercial multiple occupancy. So it's really good to understand what the possibilities and the options are. And, I just want to say a massive thank you to you for your time today and for giving such excellent expert advice.
Well, you've just mentioned two things that's worth just finishing off with. I'm sure in the world of some of your people, they will have HMOs, but some of them might also have serviced accommodation. Serviced accommodation is an absolute normal, no-brainer capital allowance claim in its entirety without any conditions, as with HMOs. So serviced accommodation and furnished holiday lets are absolutely there. But you also mentioned that people might be contemplating going from commercial to residential. I can understand that, but there's a trick here. Let's strip the capital allowances out while it's a commercial property and then drop it into the residential portfolio.
Yes, quite. There's a timing issue. So yeah. I think it seems like somebody who might be considering, they might have an eye on a commercial property, or they might be considering buying a commercial property to do just that, they need to give you a ring ASAP. Yeah. So that they can, they can determine what the best steps are before they effectively take that building out of the status whereby you can claim those capital allowances.
Yeah, you might even be buying a commercial property that you're turning into flats. And maybe, just maybe, it doesn't suit everybody this, but maybe there's an opportunity to use this as an office for a short while, claim the capital allowances, strip the capital allowances out, and then do the conversion into the flats. Because the moment you put planning permission into a building to turn it into a residential development, the capital allowances are lost. So you have to do you have to get the ducks in a row.
Yeah. Right. That's very interesting. Very, very interesting. Right. Well, there we go. People know how to contact you, Paul. Thank you very, very much indeed for giving us your time today. It's been fantastic to hear from you. And good luck with people who are listening to this or watching this and realize that there may be another source of income from their hard-earned investing.
Good. Good stuff. Thanks, Wendy.
Thank you, Paul.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the HMO Success Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how you can create a profitable HMO business, please visit our website, hmosuccess.co.uk, to find out more. We have plenty of free tools and information for you there, and also on our Facebook group, The Ultimate HMO Success System. We look forward to connecting with you very soon. Thanks for listening.